Good morning, this is David Bennett, and this is Bitcoin And, a podcast where I try to find the edge effect between the worlds of Bitcoin, gaming, permaculture, podcasting, and education to gain a better understanding of all. Edge effect is a concept from ecology describing a greater diversity of life where the edges of two systems overlap. While species from either system can be found at the edge, it is important to note there are species in the overlap that exist in neither system, and that is what I seek to uncover. So join me in discovering the variety of things being created as Bitcoin rubs up against other systems. Good morning. It is November the 1st, 2018, and it's episode 26 of Bitcoin And. And apparently, according to word on the street, this is the beginning of hashtag No Nut November. If you're seeing that hashtag across any of your various social media feeds, well, you go look into it. I already did, and I'm not going to repeat it here. So happy No Nut November. You guys that are into that, man, more power to you. Okay, so this episode of Bitcoin And is brought to you by coffee. Again, by coffee. Vitals, let's get into it. Bitcoin is just, it's just flat as a board, man. It's just not moving. And that, I don't know, that may have something to do with the fact that we got some news, which I'll get into later, about upcoming ETF. Apparently some positive comments were made by a gentleman from that thing, and again I'll talk about more about it later, but that may be a reason. But it's just, I mean, the price just isn't moving, man. I mean, it's just, today is just flatlining. So BTC is at an average of 6,350, with the high being HIT BTC that's listing it at 6,365. The low appears to be GDAX at 6,304. So it is a tight-ass spread. Transactions over the last 24 hours is 285,000. Average per hour is 11,900. Sent over the last 2 hours is 835,000 BTC. Average per hour sent of BTC is 34,800. The average transaction value is lower, 2.29 BTC. Median transaction value is a little lower at 0.031 BTC, or about $200. Block time is really low, 8 minutes and 19 seconds. I've very, very rarely ever seen the block time, and that is the time a block will be produced, and then the way difficulty and hash rate works together is that about 10 minutes will go forward before another block is produced. So when it's 8 minutes, it should be 10 minutes. That's the way that the software is set up. The algorithm, which is embedded in the software. But at 8 minutes and 19 seconds, that's quick. That is a quick block production time. I've very rarely ever see it this low. So it's produced 173 blocks over the last 24 hours at an average of 7 blocks per hour. Reward per block, or well, let's just say the fees per block, is 0.96. Reward over the last 24 hours, 2,163 Bitcoins have been produced and 16 Bitcoins have been taken in fees. The hash rate went up to 60 exahashes per second. That's an 11.34% gain in 24 hours. Wow. GitHub last commit was yesterday. And across the board, Ethereum is still down below 200. It's 197. Bcash is 424. Litecoin is $49.87. Ethereum Classic is $9. Bitcoin Gold is 26.53. And Dogecoin is 0.0038. Dogecoin. Oh, this is interesting. Oh, this is really interesting. Bitcoin or Bcash over the last 24 hours is showing, at least on my screen, at 394,500 transactions over the last 24 hours. Something's up, folks. That's not organic. Transactions per hour, transaction average per hour on Bcash is going to be 16,000 as compared to 12,000 on actual Bitcoin. Yeah, something's up. Something, that number is either wrong and I'm getting bad data from my data source, or something's up. I don't know. Coincides with the tweet from Roger Ver, a tweet from Roger Ver that we will get into for a little bit later. But again, GitHub last commit for Bcash is over, now standing at over a month ago. Even Ethereum has updated, has made a commit yesterday, October 31st, 2018. Yeah, something's up. Get ready for it, people. Get ready for it. Let's move on to the morning roundup. All right, the morning roundup is brought to you by Cash. Dirty, stinky cash. First up is that a gentleman by the name of Gabor Gerbax, which is the VanEck Digital Asset Strategies Director, is talking to Fox Business. Apparently, I think this was like yesterday. Yeah, yesterday. Him and some other people from VanEck have had a face-to-face meeting with the SEC. And this is regarding the SolidX Bitcoin ETF. It appears that the SEC may be getting close to making a decision on whether or not they're going to allow the VanEck SolidX ETF to go through. I'm reserving excitement and or dismay and or meh until all this shit is figured out, because really conjecture doesn't do anybody any good. But what the gentleman is saying is that VanEck is as close as anyone has been to getting a Bitcoin ETF approved. And one of the things is that they've seemed to have, they're saying that they're satisfying the SEC's problems with an ETF not being physically backed, not being insured, that type of thing. Well, apparently he's saying that SolidX is physically backed, which means they're going to have to actually buy the underlying asset. They're going to have to buy Bitcoin to secure the ETF and the people that are investing their money to get exposure to Bitcoin without actually owning their own Bitcoin. But an ETF has to hold the underlying asset in case things go tits up. And it also has to be insured, which apparently the VanEck SolidX ETF proposal will be insured. The entry price is interesting, 25 Bitcoin. So if you want to take part, if you want to get exposure to Bitcoin, then you better pony up 25 times $6,300 as of the price right now to be able to get exposure. That's your entry price. So regular retail investors, that this is not for retail investors. This is not for, you know, the solid Joe on the street walking around, you know, who wants to get some Bitcoin. For those of us that want, you know, that want to do that, just go buy Bitcoin. Not investment advice. Moving on is oh, good news. So Swift at SwiftCoin tweets out, good news. Bitcoin Cash Classic with the ticker BCC will be initial launched on our platform. BCC fulfills the original promise of Bitcoin as peer-to-peer electronic cash, fast, infinite block size. at zero fees. Now, this is a shit coin I can get behind. Oh, Lord have mercy. Let's just move on. So there's, okay, well, there's a new player. There's apparently going to be a new player on the block. I doubt it's going to do anything. It is just Satoshi's original vision, whatever. Okay, so there's a couple more things I want to get into before I do something else. BitHum Series 1 to launch security token exchange in the United States. All right, so this is interesting. South Korean crypto exchange BitHum has teamed up with crowdfunding platform Series 1 to launch a compliant security exchange or security token exchange in the U.S. And this is written by Yogita Khatri. The joint venture was revealed in a press release from Series 1 shared with CoinDesk on Thursday, which adds that the exchange launch is still subject to regulatory approvals from the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission and the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, or FINRA. So this is odd. Apparently, Series 1 already does offer an SEC-regulated platform that supports projects launching initial token offerings. So looks like these guys, I have never even heard of Series 1, but apparently they are already regulated by the SEC, so it makes sense that BitHum would leverage that in teaming up with Series 1 to launch a security token exchange in the U.S. So we'll see where that goes. I'm not interested at all, but I know some other people are. So there you have it. BitHum is going to hang out with a crowdfunding platform. So next up in the stack, Jameson Lopp at LOPP says, tried to sync Parity Tech's Bitcoin implementation, got to block 481824. SegWit activation. Okay, so he's saying that's the SegWit activation block. After 21 hours and 7 minutes, block 481824 verification failed with error, witness invalid nonce size. Looks like Parity has a SegWit consensus bug, marking sync time as infinity. And he comes back and says, makes sense. Zero Parity Tech Bitcoin nodes are running, and then PBTC, the implementation. If anyone had actually tried to run a node, they presumably would have found and reported this bug. If there's a consensus bug in a node, but nobody runs it, is it actually there? So this, Parity's problems just go on and on and on. The Parity hack, every time I hear about Parity, it's kind of a train wreck. And this is part of an ongoing thread that Jameson's seems to be putting together, where he started out with where he's trying to do full validation of Parity Tech 2.1.3 and how long it takes, and that it's, 22 terabytes of read and 20 terabytes. Anyway, it goes on and on and on and on like that. So Parity Tech is apparently one of the implementations is not being run at all. And if it was being run, it's got a pretty bad bug in it, insofar as it will fail syncing the blockchain right when it hits the SegWit activation block. So there you go. Last up on the block is last up on the block is from The Block, at The Block. And it is a story, links to a story, written by Frank Shaparo, and I'll read a little bit of it. $1.5 billion, Grayscale reports record inflows as institutions pour money into the crypto fund manager. Grayscale, the digital asset manager, saw year-to-date inflows hit $330 million, according to its quarter three investment report. So even though The general crypto markets are down 70% year to date. Institutional investors have contributed to 70% of the inflows from Q3. Institutional investors year to date made up only 59%. So the looks like the institutional investors are dumping money into this thing. How that's not affecting prices, kind of, you know, at least supporting them on the upswing, I don't really know, unless I guess they're fighting with whales who are bear whales, which are just like selling all their Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. I don't know, but I mean, it is what it is. So, you know, I know a lot of people kind of have a problem with Grayscale. I don't. I mean, people are going to do this, whether you like it or not. People are going to start these funds. They are going to, you know, invite institutional investors to come in. And we will just have to see where it goes. But I don't know. I mean, I kind of think it's good news because even in a massive bear market, you've got a bunch of institutional guys that are throwing $1.3 billion at that stuff. That's not at all terrible. So we're going to move on to the next segment, and I'll see you on the other side. I'm going to try adding a new little segment. Bitcoin history. A lot of us don't know our Bitcoin history. And I ran across a tweet today from Adam Back, who is retweeting Mark Friedenbach, who says simply, Bitcoin lizards. So Adam Back's retweet retweet says, now that's an old inside reference. Hashtag Bitcoin hyphen lizards. So a quick Google search brings up this article from Bitcoinist.com. Lizard Squad made 11,000 Bitcoin DDoS. So yeah, Lizard Squad made 11,000. But here's what's so funny about that is, like, I was reading the hyperlink, and I shouldn't have done that. The actual headline says Lizard Squad made $11,000 in BTC from DOSing, so like a denial of service thing. So here we go. This is from Guilherme Fernandez, January 23rd, 2015. So quite a while ago. Lizard Squad is the infamous team of black hat hackers who are best known for DOSing Microsoft's Xbox Live and Sony's PlayStation Network, the wildly popular gaming platforms, were down on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. God damn, I remember that. Leaving many gamers unable to enjoy their new consoles. Assholes. God, bunch of dicks, man. Anyway, okay, so the group of self-described cyber terrorists were involved in numerous other illegal acts, including calling in a fake bomb threat on the Sandy Hook Elementary School. The school took this threat especially seriously since it was victim to mass shooting in December of 2012. The group's newest venture has been DOSing, denial of service for hire. According to Lizard Squad, their attack on PlayStation Network and Xbox Live were marketing stunts for their new service. For the right price, they will turn their group of hacked routers on the target of your choice, called the Lizard Stressor. The illegal service was opened on December 30th, 2014, and only accepted Bitcoin for payment. So there you go. If you're going to be accused of being a Bitcoin lizard, essentially you're being accused of being one of these guys. So there you go. That's a little bit of Bitcoin history. Bitcoin history was brought to you today by coffee. Time for Marty's Bent. So, Marty's Bent for Wednesday, October 31st, 2018, issue number 351, a retrospective. He's got a picture of himself in high school dressed up as Lieutenant Dangle. Be careful with your eyes, folks. You may not want to see this. So he begins, What a decade it has been, freaks. Yep, that's me, up there looking like a goofball, so young, so naive. This is where I was the day Satoshi introduced Bitcoin to the world. A hungover senior in high school coming off a 36-hour celebration of the Phillies' 2008 World Series victory dressed as Lieutenant Dangle. It's crazy to think that 10 years have passed since this picture was taken. But as I sit here and chuckle, plus cringe, at how much of an idiot I was back then, I can't help but notice how drastically the world around me has changed and how utterly unaware I or most anyone else was of Bitcoin. 17-year-old Marty didn't have a clue about the path he was about to embark on that would inevitably intersect with this magic internet money that has caught the eyes of an untold number of freaks around the world. As everyone and their mother publishes homage pieces that describe how Bitcoin has changed over the last decade, I'm going to briefly reflect on what I've seen happen over the past decade and how Bitcoin has tied into everything in my view. A little less than a year after the above picture was taken, I was thrust out of the comfort of my parents' home and into a new city. The world was in a daze after taking a devastating blow in the form of a global financial crisis. Barack Obama had just entered office, Dwayne Wade was the leading scorer in the NBA, and Twitter was a niche app for the tech nerds in San Francisco. Much of the human race was in a deep state of reactionary thinking, looking for heroes to save them from the harm caused by the crisis. People were angry and awakening to the fact that they may be getting the raw end of a long con that made our economy and financial system inherently fragile. I, too, was angry. Angry and curious. How the hell did things get this bad? I went into college with a know-your-enemy mentality, dead set on learning as much as I could about our economy and the financial system, focused on exploiting every nook and cranny of the economy. This eventually led me to study economics while interning at an investment firm to learn more about markets and the global economy. As I was doing this, the world was becoming more chaotic by the hour as the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan continued to drag on. Fears of terrorism began to become more and more prevalent, and waves of populism and nationalistic fervor began to slowly simmer with the emergence of things like the Tea Party and anarchist separatist groups throughout parts of Southern Europe. As we pushed further into the middle of the 2010s, people's sense of hope and change have been drastically diminished as the changes they wanted to see being made were nowhere in sight. We had been duped. We were getting more of the same gridlock, slimy backdoor deals, and failure to hold those responsible for destabilizing our world accountable. This has culminated in a hyper-polarized environment which has allowed Donald Trump to become our president. Mr. Trump is a symptom of this feeling of disdain from the little guy, the blue-collar worker who suffered the most after the financial crisis. All the while, the technology that surrounds us has advanced at a breakneck pace, giving us the tools to communicate in ways that were only imaginable in science fiction just a couple of decades ago. These technologies have given the average human an immeasurable amount of leverage in a world that was previously controlled by a few gatekeepers. This has enabled the rapid dissemination of new ideas and ways of organizing, which is compounding the effects of the economic crisis. People are more incentivized than ever to disrupt a failing system that no longer serves them and have never had a better set of tools to do so, Bitcoin being one of them. Our world continues on a path of financial complexity and social disorder. Bitcoin continues to fortify and establish itself as a tool for people to store their wealth without fear of easy confiscation or censorship. This tool has gone from a fringe pet project to a $110 billion force to be reckoned with. The project is maturing at a time when the U.S. dollar status as reserve currency of the world is in the very early stages of being tested by other world superpowers like China and Russia. As they attempt to overthrow the dollar, it will be interesting to see how many people reject the notion of falling under a new monetary regime run by greedy humans who think they can micromanage life and turn to the apolitical sovereign currency that is Bitcoin. How many people will vote with their hard-earned money to exit this oppressive system by buying or working for BTC? As the idea of Bitcoin in the public psyche turns 10 today, it is crazy to think of how far it has come, what has happened in parallel to its relative maturation, and how far it still has to go on its way to providing a rock-solid tool for the individual to protect their own interest in a world that seems to get more and more divisive and authoritarian by the day. Onward into decade number two. Final thought: Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears should be more popular than they are. Probably. I clicked on that link, Marty. They're not bad. I like the Decemberists for that type of thing, though, and a couple of other bands. If you haven't checked those guys out, Decemberists are really good for this type of music. Anyway, that's going to do it for Marty's Bent, and we want to thank Marty Bent for Marty's Bent, and you can find Marty Bent over at Marty Bent on Twitter. Be sure to follow him, and be sure to check out at TFTC21. Pretty much one of my top two or three favorite podcasts of like all time. High quality stuff. And yesterday's show was with Jack Mallers of Lightning Zap Wallet fame. If you haven't listened to it yet, I would, because they talk about a lot more than just the Zap Wallet. Excellent interview. Go check it out. And we'll do Marty's Bent when Marty's Bent is now a new Marty's Bent. Bitcoin 101 is brought to you today by Jamie Dimon, who apparently doesn't give a shit about Bitcoin. So continuing on with this CoinDesk article, this section follows up the last section and is named How Can I Buy Bitcoin? So starting, this is last updated January 26th of 2018 and starts out, so you've learned the basics about Bitcoin, you're excited about the potential, and now you want to buy some, but how? Bitcoin can be bought on exchanges or directly from other people via marketplaces. You can pay for them in a variety of ways, ranging from hard cash to credit and debit cards to wire transfers or even with other cryptocurrencies, depending on who you are buying them from and where you live. One, set up a wallet. The first step is to set up a wallet to store your Bitcoin. You will need one, whatever your preferred method of purchase. This could be an online wallet, either part of an exchange platform or via an independent provider, a desktop wallet, a mobile wallet, or an offline one, such as a hardware device or paper wallet. Even within these categories of wallets, there is a wide variety of services to choose from. So do some research before deciding on which version best suits your needs. You can find more information on some of the wallets out there, as well as tips on how to use them here, and those are links given. The most important part of any wallet is keeping your keys, a string of characters, and or passwords safe. If you lose them, you lose access to the Bitcoin stored there. Let's say that again, people. The most important part of any wallet is keeping your keys, a string of characters, and or passwords safe. If you lose them, you lose access to the Bitcoin stored there. Remember, this is me talking. If it's not your keys, they're not your Bitcoins. So if you forget your keys, your Bitcoins are lost. If you give your keys to somebody else, those Bitcoins are gone because somebody's going to steal them. So let's go on to number two. Buying online. Two, open an account at an exchange. Cryptocurrency exchanges will buy and sell Bitcoin on your behalf. There are hundreds currently operating with varying degrees of liquidity and security, and new ones continue to emerge while others end up closing down. As with wallets, it is advisable to do some research before choosing. You may be lucky enough to have several reputable exchanges to choose from, or your access may be limited to one or two, depending on your geographical area. The largest Bitcoin exchange in the world at the moment in terms of US dollar volume is Bitfinex, although it is mainly aimed at spot traders. Other high-volume exchanges are Coinbase, Bitstamp, and Poloniex. But for small amounts, most reputable exchanges should work well. Note, at time of writing, the surge of interest in Bitcoin trading is placing strain on most retail buy and sell operations, so a degree of patience and caution is recommended. With the clampdown on Know Your Client and anti-money laundering regulation, many exchanges now require verified identification for account setup. This will usually include a photo of your official ID and sometimes also a proof of address. Most exchanges accept payment via bank transfer or credit card, and some are willing to work with PayPal transfers. And most exchanges charge fees, which generally include the fees for using the Bitcoin network. Each exchange has a different procedure for both setup and transaction, and you should give and should give you sufficient detail to be able to execute the purchase. If not, consider changing the service provider. Once the exchange has received payment, it will purchase the corresponding amount of Bitcoin on your behalf and deposit them in an automatically generated wallet on the exchange. You can take this can take minutes or sometimes hours due to network bottlenecks. If you wish, parentheses recommended, you can then move the funds to your off-exchange wallet. Aside, this is me talking, do not leave your money on exchanges. Don't do it. That's the situation of not your keys. And remember, if they're not your keys, they're not your Bitcoin. Okay, moving on, buying with cash. Two, choose a purchase method. Platforms such as Local Bitcoins will help you find individuals near you who are willing to exchange Bitcoin for cash. Also, LibertyX lists retail outlets across the United States at which you can exchange cash for Bitcoin. And Wall of Coins, Paxful, and BitQuick will direct you to a bank branch near you that will allow you to make a cash deposit and receive Bitcoin a few hours later. ATMs are machines that will send Bitcoin to your wallet in exchange for cash. They operate in a similar way to bank ATMs. You feed in the bills, hold your wallet's QR code up to a screen, and the corresponding amount of Bitcoin are beamed to your account. Coin ATM Radar can help you find a Bitcoin ATM near you. All right, so be aware, this one's a little old. Not sure about LibertyX, and I haven't heard from Wall of Coins in a while, or BitQuick. So, you know, things change. And this thing was only updated, you know, in December of 2000, what was it, December or January of 2018. So it's, in terms of Bitcoin, this thing is kind of ancient history, so, you know, be aware. But that's going to do it for Bitcoin 101, and we'll get back to the rest of that article tomorrow. Terrible Joke Corner is brought to you by Craig S. Wright. That's right, Craig Wright. Last week's clairvoyance-associated meeting was canceled for unpredictable reasons. I like it. It was all one sentence, too, right? It was a joke in one particular, you know, one full sentence. I like that. Shows class. Okay, the Daily Train Wreck today is brought to you by Roger K. Ver, who says, BTC supporters are too incompetent to even keep the blocks full like they want. Hashtag fail. Okay, so why is this a train wreck? All right, well, he's responding to Samson Mao at EXCELLION on Twitter. Let's go back a little bit. Samson Mao is responding, right? Or Roger K. Ver is responding to Samson, who's responding to Roger K. Ver's tweet on October the 31st, the birthday of Bitcoin, or at least the white paper. Roger Ver says, "High fees and full blocks disenfranchise those who need Bitcoin most. BCH is peer-to-peer electronic cash for the world. BTC isn't." Okay, keep that in mind. Roger Ver says high fees and full blocks disenfranchise those who need Bitcoin most. So Samson just simply responds, Roger, or at Roger K. Ver. Fees are in the range of 9 to 13 cents as I write this. Transactions over the Lightning Network are free. Blocks are not even at one-third capacity. On the 10th anniversary of the Bitcoin white paper, you could at least try to be somewhat honest. And that's where Roger Ver says BTC supporters are too incompetent to even keep the blocks full. Well, gee, Roger, I thought full blocks disenfranchised people. Which is it, Raj? Is it full blocks or is it empty blocks that are bad? Could you please make up your mind? Because even Whale Panda here, at Whale Panda, is responding to this whole mess and says Bitcoin's blocks are full. Hashtag fail. Bitcoin's blocks aren't full. Hashtag fail. Is this what desperation looks like? Trying to keep focus away from BCH drama. That's correct, because Roger can't even keep his story straight. That was the Daily Train Wrecked, and God, that's a bad train wreck. Well, that's going to do it for me, guys. I'm out. I'll try to get this thing edited and up as fast as humanly possible. Please follow me at BENND77 on Twitter. You can find Bitcoin And on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. I think it's actually hit Podbay at this point and a couple of other places. I haven't been able to check. But Bitcoin And should be on every, you know, like the most of the major podcasting platforms that there is. So please, please go subscribe. Please rank it or rate it. And please leave me criticism. What I'm doing wrong, how I can make it better, what you want to hear, what you don't want to hear. I want this show to be something that you guys can listen to, you know, early in the day so that you can wrap your head around what's coming up next, right? So with that, please again, please follow me on Twitter, go to iTunes or Google Play, find Bitcoin And, subscribe, like, share, tell your friends about it, give me some ratings. It would be really awesome to see a rating come across. Other than that, we will see you later, and happy No Net November.
This has been Bitcoin and I'm your host, David Bennett. I hope you enjoyed today's episode and hope to see you again real soon. Have a great day.